Hey everyone, this is Steve Miller, host of VOA's International Edition. Earlier this week, China's legislature has endorsed a national security law for Hong Kong that has triggered new protests in the territory and strained relations with the United States, Britain, Australia, and other nations. The Hong Kong security law will alter the territory's mini-constitution, known as the Basic Law, to require its government to enforce measures to be decided later by Chinese leaders. The governments of the United States, America, Australia, Canada, and the United Kingdom all condemned the action in a statement released on Thursday. Earlier, I spoke with RAND Corporation's senior defense analyst Derek Grossman about the developments there and the implications for the region. Now, in our Friday program, we only had an opportunity to include just a little bit of that conversation, but now, here it is in its entirety. All right, so I guess where I want to begin now is that, you know, just not too long ago, you have this joint statement come out from the United States, Britain, Canada, and Australia condemning Beijing's actions on this new national security law. You know, the U.S. tried to have a U.N. National Security Council meeting yesterday, but China kind of put the squash on that with its veto. So, you know, where does this leave Hong Kong? Because they are essentially part of China after the handoff. So, you know, given that Beijing has instituted this Article 23 up in Beijing versus in Hong Kong with the courts, where does that leave them at this point?
Well, I think, unfortunately, one country, two systems is irreparably broken at this point, because one country, two systems, which is the system put in place when Hong Kong was transferred from Great Britain to China back in 1997, essentially says that Hong Kong is part of China, one China, but can maintain separate legal and economic systems. And so what we saw in the last few hours with China unilaterally imposing the national security law from its National People's Congress, creates the conditions in which China can now freely interfere in Hong Kong's domestic affairs. And that could it could entail lots of different things. For example, one is that China can now set up agencies like, for example, intelligence agencies, police agencies within Hong Kong to manage the Hong Kong protesters in the future, or rioters from their perspective. Another example is that Hong Kong's court system now can no longer have foreign judges serving on rotation through their system, which had been customary prior to this national security law being imposed. And so China will now be able to more actively play a role in the selection of those judges. So this really does have kind of fundamental implications for Hong Kong's legal system. And economically, a lot of the problems that Hong Kong may face in the future are going to come from countries that it has been carrying out economic interactions with, for example, the United States. If you look back at Secretary Pompeo's statement, now Hong Kong could also be sanctioned as part of China, whereas they had a carved out an exclusion for Hong Kong based upon its semi-autonomous status prior to the national security law's implementation.
Now, you bring up this idea of sanctions. Now, this is coming during the global recession because of the pandemic. It's coming as China's economy is sort of sluggish. We also are coming after this trade war between the United States and China, which resulted in a phase one trade deal. And Hong Kong is Asia's financial hub. So you take into consideration all those things. How effective can economic sanctions be in changing China's behavior towards Hong Kong?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a lot of debate about that. On one side of the debate, there are those who say that Hong Kong is an essential part of China's economy because of all the things you just said. It is a, you know, financial, not just a regional financial, but a global financial hub, and it is part of China. But there are others who say that China actually depends a lot less on Hong Kong these days. In fact, if you look just across from Hong Kong, You know, a lot of the other major cities along the Pearl River Delta there, and including Shanghai. I mean, they far surpass the amount of economic output that, you know, that China would look to Hong Kong for. So there are those who say that trade sanctions against Hong Kong are not going to really make all that much of a difference for China, because Hong Kong, frankly, is not really as important as it used to be to China's economic growth.
So what kind of deterrent actions can governments take against Beijing to change its behavior towards Hong Kong? And the reason why I'm asking this is that China was not supposed to expand its presence in the South China Sea by land reclamation efforts on shoals and building outposts there, but it did, in spite of objections from several governments, including the United States and the other simultaneous claimants in the South China Sea. So what can governments do to affect change in Beijing?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, in the case of Hong Kong, I mean, unless the U.S. in concert with like-minded partners, as you mentioned, like Australia, Japan, others, Canada, perhaps European countries, unless the U.S. is willing to actually take, action in on the ground in Hong Kong to defend the Hong Kong people from this ongoing crackdown from the mainland, it's going to be very difficult to find any real way of deterring China from going forward. If you go back to the protests in 2019, many of them were waving the American flag and trying to entice the U.S. to play more of a role in Hong Kong, to defend Hong Kong. Because frankly, I mean, sanctions, like I said earlier, are not really going to do it because China doesn't depend too much on Hong Kong anymore economically. And so, you know, what else is left? And I haven't seen anything on the table that the U.S. is thinking about to defend Hong Kong from Chinese aggression, in terms of like boots on the ground type of thing. Have not seen that. What we did see last year as well is the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, which the Hong Kong protesters praised as a good step toward, you know, showing U.S. resolve to defend Hong Kong. But it's a piece of paper, to be frank, and a lot depends on what types of concrete actions the U.S. takes since that legislation passed what would they need to do in order to defend Hong Kong?
I want to step back for just a moment and ask you this. Over the past few years, Beijing has inked out different deals with neighboring countries in Southeast Asia, like Cambodia, like Laos. They've also inked out deals in Africa. And I want to get your opinion on what those countries should be looking for, because Hong Kong was supposed to be under the one country, two systems as part of a treaty with Britain for 50 years until 2047. What can these nations learn from China's actions towards Hong Kong that they should be looking out for in light of their deals with Beijing?
Yeah. So, I mean, the countries you mentioned, I mean, Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam as well. I mean, they all have signed, or at least Laos and Cambodia have already signed up to special economic zone or SEZ land lease agreements with the Chinese for extended periods of time, sometimes 99-year leases. Vietnam, there was draft legislation in 2018 whereby Vietnam was going to set up an SEZ with an undisclosed third-party country along its border. Could be Cambodia, but most likely China. Resulted in massive protests throughout the country, and eventually that draft law was withdrawn. You bring up a good point. If China is going to go back on its treaty obligations, such as in the case of Hong Kong, then what does that mean for China maintaining its obligations with these other countries? Could these countries essentially be giving over their land to China and those parts of their countries become kind of a semi-colonized or colonized status? That is unclear to this point. That's why all countries need to be careful in making these types of deals with China. And by the way, it's not just in Indochina, it's throughout the world. I mean, you could look at Sri Lanka, for example. There's a 75-year land lease on the Hambantota port, which is the port in the southern part of the island, right along sea lines of communication in the Indian Ocean. There's other places as well in which this type of behavior is taking place. And it's all usually under the auspices of Belt and Road Initiative. And that's why folks in the West have really, you know, had a lot of concerns about that program and what it means for these countries maintaining their territorial sovereignty in the future.
I guess one last thing here is, as we move forward with developments that are taking place in Hong Kong, what is the one thing that you're looking at in terms of the ongoing situation that most other people may not be aware of?
Well, I mean, I think one of the interesting wrinkles to this is that when you go back to the protests in 2019, very, very few of them were advocating for Hong Kong independence. But I think now that the number of voices is growing for that movement. And I think since what we saw in the last few hours with China unilaterally imposing the new national security law, I think the voices are going to grow even louder for Hong Kong independence. And so it will be very interesting to see how that dynamic plays out and what it means for the, you know, the future of one country, two systems, and how the U.S. is going to respond to that. Because I haven't seen anything in terms of the U.S.'s policy on if, you know, Hong Kong decided it wanted independence, and what would that mean?
That was Derek Grossman. He is a senior defense analyst with the RAND Corporation. And that's going to do it for this special extra international edition. To stay up to date with world news and events, be sure to point your web browser to voanews.com. You can do so on your phone, your tablet, your mobile device, or any other computer. 24 hours a day, just simply point your web browser to voanews.com. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE, and I'm S. Miller, VOA, there as well. International Edition broadcasts Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on the Voice of America. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Thank you very much for listening. And until I talk to you again, have a great day.